Half past the hour on a thankful Thursday, we're joined by Pastor Robbie Pruitt. Robbie's an Anglican pastor. He's headquartered in Ashburn, Virginia. His church is in Leesburg, just a hoot and a holler from Ashburn. They have hoots and hollers in Virginia, don't they?
Absolutely. Okay. It is still the South, after all. Good to be with you, Jim and David.
We missed you last week. Last week was just a. In fact, the schedule's been complicated by COVID. You've had it. You were diagnosed with it. Should ask how you're feeling now, because it's been, a week or two, huh?
Yeah, we were out a couple of weeks and then got hit by snow days. And in a snow day today in Loudoun County, though there's no snow outside. It's kind of crazy, but the kids are home. And yeah, we've all fought the COVID battle and are coming out of the COVID haze.
Mm-hmm. And of course, David, in the middle of his haze, of course, he's had a haze. He's been hazy for quite some time.
Well, that's why I recognize it.
Because Jimi Hendrix sung about the purple haze.
No, that's true.
Out of the COVID haze, aren't we, David?
I think so, yeah. I think it's, I can see the edge of the woods. I'm not out of it yet, but I can see the edge. There's trees over there, but yeah.
We talked with Dr. Don on Tuesday, and he's gone through something that he tested negative, but he had the kind of test that doesn't necessarily show up the Omicron variation. So we took stock of ourselves here, and Don's had it, and now David's got it, and we figured there's a new electronic variant. It's electron, and it's communicated over computers. So keep your distance from your mic. So
Virus is going viral. So are you in line for this thing, Jim?
Well, I feel fine. I don't think it could happen any time, though, because we've had a whole lot of people close to me here in our church, and we're back to Zoom services for a couple of weeks, and so they're. I don't want to say they're dropping like flies. They're recovering. As far as I know, nobody has been deathly ill from this thing. But certainly inconvenience, and certainly not feeling well, and that's exhibited by David here too. He's got a bad cough. We'll try to keep his participation at a minimum here. But Dave, go ahead and
cough at will.
Yeah, cough at will. There you go. We're talking about that. Well, we often talk with Robbie because he's an Anglican pastor. I know that liturgy is important, and it's always been a fascinating topic for me because I've never been associated with a church where liturgy is a central part of their church calendar. You know, it's usually potluck suppers and concerts and special guest speakers, and that's how it comprises the calendar. But in a liturgical church, there's an order and a purpose to every season, and Robbie, we are still in Epiphany, are we not?
We are, and that's green, and it's right after the Christmas season. The color is green, and it begins with, of course, just remembering that God's revelation to the Gentiles, to these wise men. The assumption there is that they're Gentile. We talked about their Jewish roots, at least.
They were at least very familiar with Judaism.
Exactly.
If not being
they understood the prophets. Mm-hmm. So with that, of course, we get the slaughtering of the innocents, where Herod is trying to snuff out the life of Jesus, and his parents flee to Egypt, and out of Egypt I called my son, and that's in fulfillment of that prophecy. Though they didn't know that that's what they were doing at the time necessarily, but it certainly fulfilled that prophecy.
I have a technical question for you here. Mm-hmm. Now, back when the Babylonians sacked Jerusalem and destroyed the temple, the prophet Jeremiah was still alive, and he, with a number of temple officials, escaped and went to Egypt, where tradition has it, and that's the basis of my, why is this just tradition and not history? The tradition is they established a Hebrew colony, a place there, which would have provided sanctuary for Mary and Joseph and Jesus when they went. Then they would have been established there for 500 years, 570 years. I don't think Jeremiah was still around, but what they established in terms of a Hebrew culture was there and supposedly flourishing. Why is there not more written about that?
Well, a lot of it's speculation. We just don't know. I mean, historically, we know about the roots of Judaism and the flight to Egypt from the Babylonian exile, those who fled there. we have some historical evidence of that, and certainly the oldest, one of the oldest Christian churches is there, but a lot of that is just unknown. So a lot of it's, you know, history or tradition says, I mean, there's a whole school of people that believe that the Ark of the Covenant was taken and is there as well. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So there is that ideating going on, but yeah, the
there are Coptic, there are Coptic Christians, which is traced their roots back to that time, I believe.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. And
that's
well
one
written,
of the oldest churches, even predating the Catholic Church. And my wife and I have a fun conversation about that because she grew up Catholic and she says, well, we're the real true church. We've got it rooted. I was like, no, there's a lot that happened before you.
And I think of Philip and the eunuch, too. I mean, he was coming to the temple. He was curious. He was learning about Judaism. He was reading from Isaiah. That must probably didn't start with that road trip.
Exactly, and there you've got Candace in the Ethiopian eunuch, but you also have Solomon being visited by the Queen of Sheba. So you've got a lot of cross pollination going on with the travels and the different nations coming, and even Solomon having these 750 wives that are linking him up with the nations themselves. That is connecting Judaism with the world. But one of the things that I'm interested in talking about today that's related to this Babylonian exile is it's horrific what happens when the Babylonians siege Jerusalem and they literally dash the children's heads upon the stones. And they kill the weak, the children, the elderly, the infirm, and they take the best and the brightest. And we are going into a weekend of the March for Life in Washington, D.C., and the Anglican for Life Summit, which happens on Saturday this year. I'm going to be attending the Youth Summit for Life this evening from 6 to 9 at the Falls Church Anglican, one of the largest historical Anglican churches in our area of Northern Virginia. And we're thinking about the fact that we as followers of Jesus are championing life for all of life. We are pro-life from birth to death, natural conception and death. And we want to be about life because Jesus was about life. In John 10:10, Jesus said, "The thief comes to kill, steal, and destroy, but I have come that you might have life and that you might have abundantly." So if you look at this championing of life, this idea that God is the author of life, we can trace this the fall and the curse in the Garden of Eden. If you eat of this fruit of this tree, you will surely die. And you can trace Satan's agenda to snuff out life throughout all of Scripture.
Here's my analysis of the Bible in a nutshell. Old Testament, life is cheap. New Testament, life is sanctified.
It's a good analysis. We've already talked about some massive with the slaughtering of the innocents and Epiphany and God's revelation to the Gentiles and Herod the Great killing these infants 2 years and younger trying to get to Jesus.
Why do you suppose he picked 2 years?
Well, just to be sure he got the job done. And again, when we read the Bible, we skip a sentence and it could be years have gone by in that transition. So Herod is being sure that he snuffs out this, quote, king of the Jews. But we see it again in the Babylonian exile. We see in Lamentations that literally when the Babylonians surrounded the city and were sieging it, that, I mean, the horrors of women and families having to eat their dead. And we see this horrific picture in Lamentations. And then you also know the Babylonian siege warfare, but then you've got this death throughout the Bible. You've also got this reference to it, out of Egypt I called my son. Well, we know that Pharaoh was throwing male Israelite children into the Nile River to try to snuff out their population when he was fearing the growth of the Israelites in the days of Moses. And of course, this is where Moses comes from. He comes out of the waters in this basket where His life is spared.
You know, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, and this is just a stunning revelation to me. The parallels between Joseph and David, and Moses, I mean, all those, and Jesus Christ.
Mm.
He's patterned. There are, I don't want to call shades or shadows of Christ. What's the portent?
A type of Christ.
Yes, a type of Christ.
Foreshadowing of Christ.
Yes, which all point to him being the Messiah. When God's time had arrived, Jesus arrived.
Absolutely, and we can even take this back to Abraham when we start to think about the pagan Canaanite gods in the land that Baal and Asherah, these Canaanite gods, were practicing infant sacrice. Hmm. That you would sacrifice your child.
The Kidron Valley was the site of much of that. Yes, just east of the temple.
These are fertility gods. And the symbol of Baal is actually a calf, and then Asherah is known as the big-breasted one. At Museum of the Bible, you can actually see these gods that were found in the archaeological record, these Canaanite gods, these clay statues of Baal and Asherah. And Baal being the masculine, Asherah being the feminine, and it's this cycle of you want fertility, you have sex in your worship of these gods, and then you produce life, and then you sacrifice this life back up to the gods, say you have a poor crop. And it's this repetition of sexual promiscuity, sexual perversion, the product of life, and then having that life sacrificed.
Is it demonic? Is that demonic?
Oh, absolutely. Any death, I would argue, anything that is not championing life or is snuffing out life is not only demonic, but it's satanic. And it is Satan's mission statement. It's threefold: kill, steal, and destroy. And my argument here from John 10:10 is if any one of these things is happening, that's of the devil. Mm. So something as simple as stealing or killing or destroying, that is the work of the enemy in the world. So Jesus said, "I came that you might have life and that you might have life abundantly." So it's really simple. And it goes all the way back to God's covenant with Abraham, because you remember that God made a covenant with Abraham, and you can actually see this covenant in Genesis, starting at verse 15, where God makes this Susan Tree covenant where he asks Abraham to get these different animals and sacrifice them to him, to cut them in half. And what people would do when they made a covenant with one another is they would sacrifice an animal. They would walk in between these animals together holding hands. And the idea is, if I don't keep my end of the bargain, may it be unto me like this animal. Hmm. And this is all after the fall, of course. And when God made this covenant with Abraham, he asked him to get all kinds of animals. And you can find this in Genesis 15. But then Abraham falls asleep. And then he sees a smoking pot and a flaming torch passing through in his dream these animal sacrifices. That is God himself. So Abraham never walks through the cut pieces. So this covenant of cutting, which is what covenant is, it's a cutting. So think about circumcision as a cutting. Mm-hmm. This covenant is a cutting. God is the only one who passes through these animals. So in other words, if God breaks God's promise, may it be unto him as these animals. May he be split in two. Mm-hmm. But Abraham isn't with God. So if Abraham breaks his end of the bargain, may it also be unto God. as unto these animals, because Abraham doesn't pass through the sacrifice. So he's not bound by it. God is. Now fast forward to God calling Abraham to sacrifice Isaac. And what do we know about this? God provides the sacrifice. Why? Because God keeps God's promises. And it's on God's shoulders, not Abraham's. And I believe Abraham understands this fully when he goes to sacrifice Isaac.
Still, God decided to test him in that.
Absolutely. But in that testing, God provides the sacrifice, and this is a foreshadowing or a type of Christ, that it would not be Abraham that gives his only son. It would be God the Father who gives his only son, Jesus, to be split in two for our life, that he would conquer death on the cross so that we have his life. He keeps his end of the bargain, and he keeps our end of the bargain.
Powerful. Good analysis. Good analysis. Oh.
So God is championing life for all of life. And you see this throughout all of scriptures, where Jesus says that I have come to lay down my life for my friends. You are my friends if you do what I tell you. No longer do I call you servants, for a servant doesn't know what his master is doing, but I've called you my friends. Greater love has no one than this, than he lay his life down for his friends.
Not much I can say after that. Except I know Robbie has a place he has to be shortly here, so we're going to let him go. But Robbie, tremendous message today. Thank you for that.
Wow.
And
nicely done.
We'll ponder that for some time to come, and we'll look forward to speaking with you again next week, because every time you show up here, we learn stuff. And that's good, and that's important. So how's your family doing with COVID? They getting by it here?
We're doing well. Thanks for asking. Everybody's really, really well, and we're just delighted to be with you today. Glad to be with you. Glad that I didn't have a soundtrack with this snow day. They're in the house. So.
Yeah. Okay. Well, blessings to you and yours, and we'll talk to you next week.
It's a joy to be with you, and David, bye-bye. Jim, take care. God bless you guys.
See you next week, Robbie.
Well done.